I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddy is here, Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. And you can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. Chris, Patricia Wells does, she lives in Paris now,
love
and
her.
She has a cooking school in the countryside in Provence, but also has done a remarkably popular book, and it's the Food Lover's Guide to Paris,
yes.
Patricia Wells. And every so often, you know, we hope for that to be updated because things are happening
always
so fast.
Changing.
Exactly. So your father's friend, she knows he's a pastry chef. So she is just coming out with this new updated guide to Paris.
Oh, exciting.
Yes, very, very exciting. And so we encourage you to have a look at that if you are going to Paris. Believe me, I remember leading a food and wine tour here at the station for our listeners.
Yeah.
And Patricia Wells was one of the people I first consulted when we all went to Paris. I said, I want to know, out of all the places you're recommending, do me this favor, tell me about them. And I followed about 10 of her suggestions, and they were so great. She said to me at the time, the best profiterole in all, we were talking about puff pastry with vanilla ice cream inside
favorites.
And the most gorgeous deep, dark, rich chocolate sauce poured over the top. The best profiterole in all of Paris. And we went to this sort of funky area in this kind of retro chic, wonderful place. It was, to this day,
the
best profiterole I have ever had.
She scours the city for the best.
And she has great taste. So that's out.
But coming soon.
Food Lover's
Guide.
Oh,
it's out already.
It's out right
Very
now.
Cool.
And there's an app, by the way. So you can see the app. So it's Food Lover's Guide to Paris, and it's an iPhone or iPad app.
That's
also
what you want when you're traveling.
I know.
Where am I having dinner tonight?
so true. All right. So that's one thing. Wanted to let you know also that the Iron Bar competition tonight, bourbon cocktails at Milford, Connecticut's Plan B Burger Bar Restaurant. It's tonight at around 8:30. Chris and I are judging along with Tyler Anderson. And Chris, we can't wait for this. So every cocktail must feature Willet bourbon, and that is a very good bourbon.
That's going to be a tough job.
And yes, I will be using a spitting bucket, as distasteful as that is to mention here on the Food Schmooze, because you cannot try the cocktails of 12 competitors who are working. They're performing in six separate heats, as they say. And there's going to be good food available, so check it out, and we hope to see you at Plan B in Milford, Connecticut tonight. So there you go.
Exciting.
Excited. And here's another thing, because Plan B always participates in our martini contest. So here is the thing. I want you to save the date, Thursday, June 19th, because you are invited. How about this as a way to kick off summer? Thursday, June 19th, you're invited to attend and be a top judge at the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze Martini Competition. Chris Prosperi, Lori, and Jonathan will be there. It is all to benefit CPTV and WNPR. And CPTV will be there to film this year.
That's cool.
So what you do is you taste at all the cocktail stations. And these stations are works of art in themselves so often because these competitors do all this crazy wild stuff.
Remember Plan B did the bacon rose.
They
took those flower petal things and then they wrapped little bacon roses.
How about the guy who did an ice sluice?
Oh, yeah.
That was like a big ice Z. And to get your drink, the cocktail went all the way through the sluice and then into your glass. It was unbelievable. That's what it's like. So you have voting papers and you vote for your favorite cocktail, and the winner is crowned the king or queen of the Food Schmooze Martini contest. It is always a sellout experience. We have the best dance music on the planet. So you can go online to ctmartini.org. There is a discount for designated drivers. Lots of people pool and do limo stuff. So It's the most fun of the year to benefit WNPR and CBTV, of course, the Food Schmooze. And it is at the Riverview in Simsbury, Connecticut.
Beautiful location.
Beautiful location. So that's ctmartini.org right now for tickets and information. Okay, Chris, are you ready? This is exciting. I want to say this. Chris and I have been talking about this a lot. You know, Chris does a column with Linda Juca in the Hartford Courant, and it is aimed at home cooks. I appreciate what the two of you do so much,
Thank you.
Because like you, we talk about this all the time. Chefs do amazing things. Chris, you're a professional chef. They do amazing things. They often go to cooking school. But one of the things that can happen to chefs is that they forget what it's like to be a home cook. And, you know, just everybody in the food world is always learning. So that's what we have in common.
Yeah.
But we don't have staff. Yeah. We don't have – so we need our recipes to be kind of simple.
Linda taught me in one day after working with her the first day. And we did two recipes. And then she goes, now you can clean up. And my jaw hit the ground at the mess I made. Because in a restaurant, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
you don't have staff,
people.
So you have to adjust.
I want people.
Cooking. I want people. Yeah, but at home you don't have it, so you do one pot meals, one bowl meals.
Okay, so here's what we would like to do. We would like to feature home cook recipes here on the show, and we want to get them from you, our home cooks. So I am inviting you to go to Facebook and send us one of your favorite recipes. Now, maybe it's something you created. Maybe it's something you have clipped out and saved. Maybe it's from your favorite book. Just tell us what it is. But, detail the recipe for us. And we would like to feature you on the Food Schmooze. So just do it right on Facebook. Search the Faith Middleton Show on Facebook. And you will find us. And we cannot wait to hear from you. I am, too. Can't wait to see what comes in any category you want. Okay, so cannot wait for that.
A special category for bacon, though.
No special category. All right, Chris. Here we go. And I have to thank Chris because he came in today with a box of chocolates, and he said, "I don't think you're going to believe this." Now, here's the story behind this. Would you believe a single cow origin chocolates? I mean, we have some amazing some amazing milk and goat producers in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Farmers Cow in Lebanon, Arethusa in Litchfield, Shadow Valley in Summers, Baldwin Brook Farm in Canterbury, Fieldview Farm in Orange. This is just a few of them. I wish I could name you all, but I must tell you about this. This is a small farm in Goshen, Connecticut, where the owners are cherishing a very small herd of cows. And these cows are producing milk of astounding quality. And that precious milk from, say, a single cow is deemed acceptable to create the farm's staggeringly good handmade chocolates. The woman at the farm grounds her own chocolate, gets her own cacao beans, and grinds
and
the chocolate.
Makes her own chocolate.
Herself.
Yes.
She's not using the base chocolate that so many chocolate stores
and chocolatiers
use. And chocolatiers. Okay. She's grinding it herself. She grinds her own nuts for these chocolates. It creates European-style fresh yogurt from the milk of these precious cows. And I haven't tasted this creme fraiche, but Chris says it is just jaw-dropping.
I almost fell over.
This is the when do you hear this story? This is the most amazing story to bring to you. I would like you to meet Kim and Clinton Thorne. They are at Thorncrest Farm. That's on Town Hill Road. That is a dirt road.
It has to be. It's in Goshen.
A Town Hill Road in Goshen, Connecticut. Thorncrest Farm. Of course, during this conversation, we're going to give you a website. So Kim and Clinton Thorne, welcome to the Food Schmooze.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Chris. Thanks for having us.
All right, I can hear when you're both talking at the same time. It might be a little bit hard for our listeners in cars. So I'm going to take you one at a time. Or when one of you finishes, how about the other one jump in?
Okay.
So let's start with the cows. The cows are how many in the herd?
Okay, that would be me. We milk basically 22 cows.
You have 22 cows. And these are special cows?
Yep, they're special cows because back in 1984 when Kim got back from Europe, she needed a very specific flavor for her goals with the chocolates. And the American milk supply had basically gone towards production. And we needed old genetics. We sort of went backwards to get ahead. So I actually had to go to Canada, and I had a choice of 305 heifers. And I bought a heifer named Hanover Hill Jethro Coral. And now every cow that we milk today goes back to Coral at least once.
And you like the genetics of that she brought to you because it was about taste as much as anything else.
There's a natural sweetness to the milk. Kim will tell you, but she's anti-sugar. And so she wanted the sweetness to actually be in the base product, which, of course, is the milk.
Wow. Okay. Now, what do these cows eat?
They ate, it's a long story, but I'm going to break it down.
Yeah, make it short for me.
Okay. Basically, we grow all of our own hay, and we pasture them. But I'm a pasturist for 24 years. We've never used pesticides, herbicides, or chemical fertilizer. And we harvest the hay when it's, as Chris saw yesterday, it's like a salad. And so if you feel our hay or you smell our hay, you actually can smell that sweetness that you're tasting in the milk and in the cream and in the butter.
Now, before we get to the chocolates, you are telling me that when you smell the milk, either one of you, I don't know who does the smelling, but when you smell the aroma coming off the milk, you can actually tell which cow it's from?
Yes, that would be me, Faith. Yes, I can. I spend a lot of time with the cows over the years that Clint and I have been farming together, which has been about 25 years that we've been farming together. And so I know the cows very well, but I can smell the milk when it's entering the creamery, which when it enters the creamery, it's within a minute from the time the cow is being milked that it comes into the creamery, and I begin working with it to develop the flavors for that day that I plan on creating.
So people can come to your farm and buy the milk or the creme fraiche or the yogurt that you make from it. But are you matching the particular flavor of a cow's milk with the ingredients in a particular chocolate?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I have certain chocolates that are just from certain cows. As a matter of fact, like Chris can talk about that a little bit yesterday. His palate actually picked up on one particular cow. Her name is Creed. And she has been on the milk chocolate almond truffles, the peanut butter, and the amaretto. And so I got the butter and the cream from her, as well as the milk just for those particular chocolates.
Well, Kim, I have to say, I don't know if that cow is attached to the peanut butter thing.
I
just thought I was going to faint. I really, honestly, so many of them, your chocolates are astounding, really astounding. And now I'm beginning to see why. Quickly, Kim, a little tough on your cell phone, but so quickly tell me, where do you get the cacao beans to make your own chocolate, which nobody does? I mean, the biggest chocolate makers often don't do this. Where do you get the beans?
Well, actually, most of my beans come from Venezuela. The Sur del Lago area in the northwest corner of Venezuela is some of the oldest plantations where they grow.
So, yeah, well, just barely. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break and here on the Food Schmooze, and then we'll be right back to tell you more things about Kim and Clinton at Thorncrest Farm in Goshen, Connecticut, where they are making the most amazing things. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Bean. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Bean. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. And it is there on Facebook that we hope, if you have a good recipe that you like to cook at home, that you will send it to us on Facebook. Just search The Faith Middleton Show, because we would like to feature you here, you know, with our show site. And we think it would be great, great fun. Thank you to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. WNPR's content director is Jim Cutie, the best guy in the world. We thank you first and foremost for listening to us. And we are talking with Kim and Clinton Thorne, who own Thorncrest Farm. And they make, Kim, it's her project. She makes Milk House chocolates. I think Clinton gets you know, in on this project. But
the benefits.
These are Kim's thing. And it all starts with this tiny herd of cows from Canada that have the right genetics, according to them, that produce sweet milk, the hay. They pay attention to the most amazing details, these two, as Chris has described it to me. Chris went to visit the farm the other day and said he just has never seen anything like it. And they're making these artisanal, you know, these handmade chocolates with the purest ingredients, and they are remarkable. You can see this online, all of it, at milkhousechocolates.net, milkhousechocolates.net. Or you can go to the farm, because in the barn is where Kim and Clinton sell the chocolates and
the
sometimes some cheese, but they sell the milk,
yeah,
and the creme fraiche,
yeah,
and the
yogurt
and the, you know, the European yogurt. So here is, listen to this, a sampling of flavors. Mr. Ives Mints, Supreme's Raspberry Dark, Intense Dark Chocolate Orange Truffle, Dairyman's Delight, Hazelnut Coffee, Milk Chocolate Soft Caramel, Pumpkin, Dark Chocolate Ginger Cream, Classic Madagascar Vanilla, The Dark Side, Cabernet Sauvignon Truffle, oh, is that good, Harper's Mango, Almond Milk Truffle, Chocolate Truffle, Milkmaid's Irish Cream, Creamy Peanut Butter, Milk Chocolate, my favorite, and many more. Now, here are the ingredients. This is the key. Cacao mass. These are made from beans that Kim grinds herself at
into
the farm.
Chocolate.
Into chocolate. Milk, sugar, cocoa butter, soy lecithin, and that's an emulsifier. Pure vanilla, and that's what makes chocolate. So she's doing,
yeah,
this herself. Most places, to tell you the truth, will go and get the workhorse, as Chris, mm-hmm, as you've called it, the workhorse of the pastry industry, which is Calabo, the industrial blocks of it. Mm-hmm. And that's how they make chocolate, which is great chocolate.
Great chocolate.
But this
special
is something else. This is something else. The ingredients of the fillings, depending on the chocolate chosen, milk, cream from their cows,
yeah,
all named, butter, fruit, berries, spices, sea salts, nuts such as peanuts, hazelnuts, almonds, and pistachios, nut paste as in hazelnut, natural oils, lavender buds, zest of citrus as in lemon, lime, and orange. There
heaven
is not an artificial thing,
no,
in this.
Heaven.
It's unbelievable.
You have to hear the stories, too. Like the stories of the pumpkin or Mr. Ives Mint. A lot of these, each individual ingredient has a story, which is very cool.
Okay. So, but let me ask a question before we get to the story.
Ahead.
So, tell me, in terms of the herd, the small herd of cows, Clinton, what's the deal with the lights?
Okay. What we found is so many different things change the flavor of milk. And it's something temperatures do, but fluorescent lights made the cow's milk. Kim noticed it right in the creamery. She came in and she said, you know something, what we're doing now, it's not working. I said, why? And she said, it's different. Well, we had done it at our old farmers. We had hung up some new fluorescent lighting, and we took the brand new lighting down, and that was that.
You know, Kim, I'm getting the idea that you are, in fact, a super taster. Because what you can do, very few people can do, and they get paid a lot of money to do it. So this is really something. And you know, as I remember talking with a taste scientist who said that women are generally a higher number of super tasters than men are. But the men you see in cooking school are usually that crowd of super tasters. They've self-selected and ended up in cooking school. So Kim, tell me about the pumpkin one. That was really quite amazing. Did you pick some kind of special pumpkin?
Well, actually, Faith, the pumpkin flavor was an inspiration from my husband, who loves pumpkin pie, and it was actually my toughest flavor. And
yeah.
A gentleman by the name of Clinton Finn here in Goshen grows those pumpkins, and I use the puree from that. But the pumpkin is very difficult in terms of the strong flavor and to...
Oh, it's great. Hey, Kim, we're losing you. I'm so sorry about that. Just barely. You're skipping, unfortunately. Anyway, I gather you're getting the pumpkins from this guy who's got a small pumpkin farm there in Goshen and doing, I think, some of the spices that would be in a pumpkin pie, correct?
Correct. And it's blended with one cow. So the balance of chocolate flavor, the pumpkin, and the spices are all even, just like... For me, it's like, how I see it, it's like musical notes. And I want every single flavor to stand out, but yet have a complete composition at the end of it.
Yeah.
And she told me yesterday.
Well, the milk chocolate also is amazing.
But she tried different milks with the pumpkin.
Yep.
And this specific cow gave the pumpkin the forefront flavor. That she really got that into developing this chocolate, right, with the pumpkin
I've
filling.
I've never heard of anything like this.
And each cow's milk gave the pumpkin a little different role to play,
now,
right?
You've got ground beef there that you sell from what kind of cattle?
Texas Longhorn.
Okay,
and they feed and finish on grass?
That's correct. Absolutely. We do not feed grain to them. They are 100% pure grass or hay fed that we produce the hay ourselves. So it's a very lean, pure, healthy meat.
And you've got good live bacteria in the yogurt from this precious milk from these precious cows?
Absolutely. Faith, the yogurt that I make is a Bulgarian-style yogurt, so it's thicker and it's creamier and it's sweeter. So you really, the base milk that you use for something like that, not only does it have to be able to have the proteins to have the correct inoculation, but it also has to have the sweetness naturally to come out in the profile of that yogurt. And so the Bulgarian style is not only delicious to eat, but it holds up very well in cooking, in baking, and that's why I prefer that.
Just tell me, what do I have to do to live in your barn? I will do anything to live in your barn. I just can't believe how much I want to live there. You've got everything that's good in life there. It's just amazing. Okay, so here's what this is: Thorncrest Farm. They do Milk House chocolates. So if you want to find them online, you can go to thorncrestfarm.net, or you can order online the chocolates, which and you can find that at milkhousechocolates.net. So either one. And by the way, the farm is on a dirt road, Townhill Road, in Goshen, Connecticut. It's really, you two are, I haven't even gotten into how Clinton, you are, tell me quickly, I know you are a furniture maker, and you do only four pieces a year?
Yep, I just use hand tools, and I make 4 to 6 pieces a year, yep.
And when I go online, what is the sentence I'm looking for to take me to pictures of your work? Because it's jaw-dropping.
I'll probably have the one, have the only.
There's something about it, Talon, Open Talon or something?
Talon, sorry, yeah, yep, you're right, exactly. The shop is called the Open Talon.
Open Talon, when you see that line at the site, click on it, my friends, to see the most amazing furniture. You'll understand why he makes four pieces. And one of them, I understand, is a bureau for the cows.
Which I loved yesterday,
yep,
the cows,
yep,
bureau.
This is why I want to live in the barn. This is what I'm telling you. The best furniture, the yogurt. The dairy, everything, the meat, I'd be set. And I'm around these wonderful people, because who else but wonderful people would do something like this?
A special place.
Faith, right now we don't have a stall open for you, but I'm going to put you on the list.
I was thinking of something on the second floor.
up in the hayloft.
Yeah, I really was. And I need cable, which should be no problem down that dirt road. Okay. Hey, you are the best. I am just so delighted to meet you. Chris, thank you for finding them. You have to keep letting us know what you're doing, okay? You just keep letting us know everything you're doing. I'm just stunned by what the detail and the care that goes into what you're doing. This is like some, you know, lifetime craftsperson in Japan that we're talking to.
European countryside in Goshen, Connecticut.
Oh, my God.
It really is.
Yep. Thank you. So milkhousechocolates.net. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Is that a thing?
It's special.
Or is that a thing?
There are not too many things in life that you find. And again, Faith, when I went there yesterday, I wasn't thinking. I thought I was going to get some chocolate. I had no idea what I was about to experience when I walked in there and Clinton took me into the barn and said this to me. I want you to meet the cows. Right? Not I want to show you the cows. I want you to meet the cows. And that is, right, a thing a farmer doesn't tell you. I want you to meet the cows.
I know.
Right?
Amazing.
And then you
go in the
barn. I
actually have met farmers who've done that.
It's
Craig Floyd at Footsteps Farm. Everybody's got a name.
Farmers.
You know, oh, yeah, I agree.
And you're right. He's not the only one. But you have when you have to support them.
Yeah. So if you missed what we were talking about, if you're riding in the car and you can't, please go to our website because we have put them up there. Mm-hmm. It's thorncrestfarm.com. And they're at our website. So just go to us at WNPR.org and click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and you'll find everything you need to know about these lovely people, WNPR.org. Okay, Chris, I was looking at Fine Cooking Magazine, and they featured a device that I thought was so terrific. So I want to get to that. In the meantime, I would like to invite you to call and tell us about your favorite weeknight meal. What is easy that you do? That, you know, maybe it's something you throw together, crazy easy, maybe one or two steps, whatever it is. I think we all need inspiration about this. And so I hope you will, call us and tell us about that here on the Food Schmooze right now, because we have lines open to you. 203-776-9677. Every once in a while, we like to throw open the phones to our Food Schmooze pals. 203-776-9677.
It gives us inspiration too, right? When
yeah.
we hear these ideas.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things, Chris, is a panko crusted chicken. And depending on whether, if someone's coming over for a quick weeknight meal, there's so many people who have these gluten issues. Mm-hmm. I will do a gluten breadcrumbs on this.
And those
you can
get at the supermarket now.
Oh,
everywhere.
Yeah. Aaliyah in Connecticut makes them. And they A-L-E-I-A in Old Saybrook. Unbelievable. Yep. They're in all the supermarkets.
You can't
but there
even
are
tell
many,
the
many kinds. But she's just so terrific. So there's. That's what I do. I will just dip in some egg and then either some panko or some gluten-free crumbs, and then in olive oil, salt and pepper, and then olive oil in the pan, and off I go. Sometimes I will dip it again in egg and again in breadcrumbs if I want it thick. But basically, I just do that one dipping in some olive oil in a medium-high pan, and then, you know, the chicken breast is usually thin enough, and there you go, on some salad with balsamic and olive oil, and how perfect, a little wedge of lemon. Perfect, perfect meal, and it comes together so quickly.
Yeah, and not a lot of work, right? And not a lot of work, but not a lot of time. Those are the key things to quick meals during the week, right? You don't want to come in with two shopping bags worth of stuff and get chopping, and an hour later you have dinner.
Well, that's just overwhelming for working people.
Yeah, exactly. You want to have, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and then it's ready.
And I mean that includes mothers working at home, because, boy, are you working. Mothers are like CEOs at home. I don't know how you do it. Okay, Rachel, Faith Middleton with Chris, welcome to the Food Schmooze.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome, Rachel. So do you have an idea for us? What do you do for a quick weeknight meal?
You know, I do something that's very super quick and simple. I have twins and an older son who's 8. I do just a dip, a raw vegetable, and I pick hummus or some type of bean dip.
Yeah.
And they love it. I don't do a lot to it. You know, sometimes I'll pick different flavors in the hummus, but pretty much they just really enjoy going at the different, you know, types of vegetables, trying new foods. And
cool.
It's great for a family meal because we can eat Moroccan style or we can do, you know, custom sit at the table.
I like that, Rachel. I think, and it's delicious, and you can get the hummus in so many flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what a good way to get kids to eat vegetables, you know? So,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say, you know, for the kid-friendly stuff, they really actually go for, like, the roasted peppers. Sometimes mm-hmm. they'll feel a little more savory. They'll do, like, an olive tapenade combination.
Very
but
cool.
If I'm entertaining... I have people coming over. I'll do, you know, different things like 40 spices, zesty lemon. Sometimes I'll do it with like a little mango salsa, you know, just so
nice.
That they can have sweet and savory and it all works.
And do the kids ever have it as a hummus on a sandwich?
I've done that too. We usually buy like the little wheat wraps. And my kids, they're 5 years old, but they're pretty independent, so they're able to actually make their own sandwiches.
That's
wow.
cool. Teach them when
that
they're young.
That is the best. Good for them.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate you calling.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Here we go. We're going to take a quick break here on the Food Schmooze. I hope you'll support your local food growers and food makers. We'll be right back with the favorite kitchen tool of the moment. It involves baking. Stay with us. Middleton with my buddy Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, where I hope you will tell us about one of your weeknight recipes. It doesn't even have to be weeknight. One of your favorite recipes as a home cook. Hope you'll give it to us on Facebook. Just search the Faith Middleton Show to find us on Facebook. Okay, Chris, here's the Fine Cooking Magazine said they were looking at a whole bunch of stuff, and they said in terms of equipment, this is their favorite tool of the moment. It is a cake lifter. So do you see how broad
I
it is?
Saw it.
It's as wide as sort of a cutting board. In other words, imagine a round cake, and it's thin. And it's just, and it has a handle so you can grip it up
like
at the top.
It's like a pizza peel for a cake.
It's exactly that. And it slides right under
off.
And
yeah.
you can put it on the dish and
uh-huh.
take it off the dish.
Yeah.
So it is so handy to have. So anyway, it is, it's like a jumbo spatula as they describe it. So there
like
you go.
One.
That is a cake lifter.
Anyone
and you can,
who's ever tried to move a cake.
Yeah.
Once you flip it out of the
and
pan,
broken it,
so,
trying
yeah.
to make cover yeah. up my mistake with frosting
yeah,
and whipped
cream.
Yeah, because
you flip it onto a cooling rack usually to let cool. That would be the best way to get it off.
Just ahead, we are going to talk with Lisa Fain, who is author of the Homesick Texans Family Bible, and she's going to tell us how to make the easiest, talk about home cooking that's simple, the easiest breakfast sausage all by yourself. Honestly, it is so easy, it's crazy.
Breakfast
and then
sausage.
We're going to talk a little bit, if we have time,
yeah.
about how to make Southeast Texas jambalaya, which is, oh, it's so good. I've got a couple discoveries about New York City, Chris, that I have to let you know about. The first one is on the Upper East Side, a restaurant called Rotisserie Georgette.
Oh, yes.
14 East 60th Street. Beautiful interior. Spit-roasted chickens, quail, and fish going round and round on that gorgeous French rotisserie. Georgette Farkas was with Daniel Boulud for years, and he's now an investor in this restaurant. And these chickens are Amish from Indiana. You can order them with all these different seasonings. The highbrow bird for anyone celebrating is the poulet de luxe. It is mushroom stuffing under the skin and a slice of foie gras on the side, just for the fun of it, I think, just to be outrageous. So that's Rotisserie Georgette at 14 East 60th Street on the Upper East Side. I mean, beautiful.
Yeah,
really
I've seen
beautiful.
Pictures.
Okay.
On the list of places to go.
Also in the city, in the Chelsea neighborhood, you can go to all the art galleries, too, while you're there. I tried a place I liked very much, Basta Pasta. Now, this name does not begin to convey what's going on inside. It's kind of modern and open and clean on the inside. Giant open kitchen. You see them, all the cooks doing all their things. It's Asian-inspired sculptures sitting on these pedestals up on the walls. And I think New York Magazine, they got it exactly, because I was Googling getting all kinds of information about this place after I ate there. They got it right, and they said, this is like describing it as if, they say, picture Tokyo's hottest Italian restaurant. That's what it is, because we have Chef Toshi Suzuki and a crack staff of Japanese chefs and servers, and they're doing their spin on Italian. Lots of wood-fired cooking, pasta tossed, for instance. These are some of the classics in a big wheel of Parmigiano Reggiano. You know, they carve it out, and so the pasta is made at your table.
Oh,
they put the cooked fresh, just out of the water pasta.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's broiling hot into the bowl that has been carved into the wheel. Of Parmigiano Reggiano, and then they start scraping with a fork so that every strand gets the cheese and gorgeous olive oil. And oh boy, then what do they do?
you think that's
good right there,
yeah,
but
yeah.
They're not done. Then they get the most gorgeous strips of the leanest prosciutto, and they just place the strips on the top of that pasta.
All right, when
sitting
are we going?
Honestly,
just for the show.
It is crazy. I had lamb chops that were, I had a parchment paper that you open up at your plate for an appetizer, and inside every kind of imaginable wild mushroom had been poached in some delicate little winey something or other.
And you
tasted the difference of every single mushroom.
Delicate.
It was like a jewel. I mean, it was just amazing. It's just fantastic. They do, you know what I wish I'd gotten? The sea urchin pasta. It has basil, clams, mussels, shrimp, squid, and scallops. You know, fresh pink sea urchin.
When are we going?
Basta, pasta.
Georgette's for lunch.
Chelsea neighborhood
Chelsea
of New York
dinner.
City, right? Rotisserie Georgette. Yes, for dinner. We can do them all. Okay, here we go. Can't wait for this, because Lisa Fain is a transplanted Texan, meaning she lives in New York City, but has grown up, her family's been around Texas forever. And Lisa did a book called Lone Star Cooking, From My Kitchen to Yours, and now this one, The Homesick Texan's Family Table. Lisa, welcome to the Food Schmooze.
For having me. Hello.
Oh, such a pleasure. Appreciated so many of your recipes. And so how are you making out? Are you I know you're not. The weather has not been friendly.
No. It's funny. I was in Texas over the weekend, and it was actually spring there. You know, I got a little bit of allergies, and it was warm. And then I come back to New York, and there's another threat of snow. So I'm ready for spring to happen in New York and Connecticut too.
Oh, spring! Are you familiar with spring here? It's spring. Spring is everything.
It is.
I mean, you know, high winds, balmy, bathing suit one day, blizzard the next. This is our spring. So true to form, here we go with the snow. Let's start with bacon molasses breakfast sausage, because I could not believe how easy this was. And I know this is at our website right now, by the way, WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show, and of course you'll see the Food Schmooze Leaks. It's right there, right now. Bacon molasses breakfast sausage. So I'll say the ingredients, and you tell us how easy this is. Ground pork, some bacon, which is finely chopped, molasses, smoked paprika, brown sugar, kosher salt, dried sage, and black pepper. So salt and pepper, a little sage, some brown sugar, some paprika, a little bit of molasses, some chopped bacon, and some ground pork. That's it. What happens to it, Lisa?
Well, what happens is when you cook it up, the bacon cooks and crisps and releases, you know, some more fat and some smoky flavors.
You mean all this goes in together and you make patties?
Yes, when you make it, yeah, it's real simple. You just throw it all into a bowl and stir it together. And then, you know, you test a little bit to make sure the seasonings are right. And then you just let it sit for a little while for the flavors to come together. And that's it.
And then into the pan it goes 5 minutes per side. These patties are about 2 inches wide, quarter inch thick.
Yes.
Medium-high heat. You fry them. And that sausage will keep in the refrigerator for about a week uncooked, and you can freeze it uncooked too, and it'll stay in there for about 3 months or so. So that is great. And I was saying, you know, as I mentioned on the website, how terrific to be able to stay at your brunch, and I made the sausage.
You know? Yes. It sounds like you did a lot.
And there's
yes,
no you know, crazy ingredients in here. This is just
mix and
food.
Go. It's like making hamburger patties.
I love sausage so much.
Yes,
so
I do. Especially with bacon in it.
I know. Well, I mean, I just burst out laughing when I saw that. So, Lisa, I have a thing about bacon here on the show. It's a bit of a shtick, but I do truly love bacon.
Oh, my God.
But we do play it up as much as we possibly can.
But it's so good. And in sausage?
And in sausage. It's actually
it's
a smart
whammy.
It's a smart idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
bacon and sausage, usually. Yeah. One strip and then one little patty. But now it's all in one.
What?
What kind of bacon do you use? Do you use some fancy artisanal bacon, or do you just use regular bacon?
You know, it just depends on my budget and what I'm looking for. For this, I tend to go with a thicker cut, smoky bacon, kind of like Nyman Ranch might be a good brand, or even, you know, my butcher's house-smoked bacon, something that has a little bit more flavor to it than just your run-of-the-mill bacon.
Okay, that's good. All right, can we turn now, because this recipe is also on our website at the moment. It is a sausage and shrimp jambalaya. This is a specialty in Southeast Texas. And you've got your recipe in here, but I just want to say the reason I love this recipe is that trust me on this. This dish is such a thing to make if you've got people coming over on the weekend. Or, you know, just a crowd, you want to do something celebratory, you want to watch a TV show, you want to have some kind of a little party, this is a great, great dish. Or if you're hanging around and on a Sunday you want to make something because you finally have a little bit of time, what a great thing to make. And you can have some left over even for Monday, the busy, busy day, the start of the week. So this is sausage and shrimp jambalaya. Now, this has quite a number of ingredients. And we would tell you, as I always do on the Food Schmooze, to remember to go to your health food market where they have spices in bins and to just get a little more than is needed for the recipe in each of the little plastic bags. And it will cost you like 25 cents per bag, 30 cents, rather than spending $5, $6 a jar. So that's the way to make something like this super affordable. And how crazy. What are you going to spend $40 on spices? So we have a little vegetable oil or bacon grease and some onion and jalapenos and bell pepper and garlic. And andouille or smoky sausage and diced tomatoes from a can, parsley, dried thyme, dried oregano, cayenne, chicken broth, rice, medium shrimp peeled and deveined, smoked paprika, and some green onions. So now, where's this recipe from?
This recipe is actually an adaption from a friend's recipe, a friend of mine from Southeast Texas. And Southeast Texas, of course, borders Louisiana. So the cuisine around there has a lot of, you know, Cajun and Creole influence. And so this is an adaption of that.
Well, so this one of the great things about this, Lisa, is this business of just getting a big four-quart pot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could use a deep skillet, as you point out. And, you know, the oil goes in the pan and you start throwing things in. So,
absolutely. It's so easy. I mean, it's just this great one-pot dish.
Do you prep? I like to prep all the dishes ahead of time, you know, all the ingredients ahead of time. Do you do that, Lisa?
I do. Yeah, I'm really into mise en place. I like to have everything and just dump as I go.
Yes, which is a fancy French way of saying put out a bunch of bowls and then start cut all your stuff and put them in the bowls, and then you just dump the bowl in as the instructions dictate. So the French call it mise en place. So so you start dumping in after your oil heats up in that pan, the onion and the jalapenos and the bell pepper, and you just stir that and it becomes translucent. The peppers get soft. That's about 10 minutes. And then in goes the garlic and the chopped up sausage, and you cook some more and stir some more and 5 minutes more. And then you put in that can of tomatoes, but you don't want us to drain the can. That's interesting.
Yeah, because I think the liquid, you need all the extra liquid if you're using canned tomatoes, and it's all going to get absorbed by the rice, and so it just adds to the dish.
Yeah, and you need that metallic taste, I think, don't you? So parsley and thyme and oregano and cayenne and chicken broth and rice. And the rice, when it goes in, is uncooked.
Yes.
Yep.
Wow, and very cool.
Yeah, isn't that good?
Yeah.
So it goes right into the broth itself.
It gets cooked with all those spices and tomatoes.
Stir that up, put it on high, it starts to boil, then you put it on low, you bring it down, put that cover on that little darling, and there you go, 20, 25 minutes. And what happens with, what does that rice do?
Well, it absorbs all the liquid and all the flavors in the pot, and it's not, you know, it gets a little sticky, but it's just, you know, it melts with everything, and it's heavenly in your house.
The sticky parts.
Yeah, so you've got that seafood thing and that sausage going on. So we're getting the rice to act like a risotto in here.
Almost
it's
a paella.
Absorbing
paella,
right?
That's interesting. Yes, it's actually, it's inspired by paella, the dish.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Apparently, the Creoles in Louisiana, there were some Spanish people, and they didn't have saffron, so they couldn't make jambalaya. They couldn't make paella, so they started doing jambalaya instead.
Very cool.
Smart.
And you forget how big Texas is, too, and the food is so wide-range because it's such a big state.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
By the end, the shrimp, by the way, the shrimp goes in at the end, and it's done in about 5 minutes.
Yes.
And then, the very last minute, the paprika goes in, the chopped green onion. Maybe you want to correct a little salt and pepper in there. But, what a great
dish. It's Southern paella.
Yeah.
It really is. That's amazing. I never thought of it that way. That's a great way of thinking, and that's where it came from.
Hey, so how would – I don't think – honestly, I mean this. I don't think I have met someone from Texas who has not been a good cook.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. Of course, this is ridiculous because there are people in Texas who are probably horrible cooks. But I don't know whether it's lucky or what is happening. But I just am – I've been amazed at whether it's doing some kind of barbecue thing or doing a kind of stew of some kind or making some kind of specialty. It's been such good food. You must have a ball eating there.
I do. And that, well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because when I was writing this book, you know, one of the things that I think Texans value is home cooking. You know, I feel like I've never met a Texan who's not a good cook either. It's like everyone I know cooks. You know, they might not cook all the time, but you're right. Everyone has like a chili or, you know, a smoked brisket or something that they're proud of. So I think that's just a value that Texans have.
Yeah, and but I wonder, do you think it's, of course it's not exclusive to Texas because everybody's got a thing, usually.
Yeah,
somebody's
in an
got
area,
something they're proud of.
Yeah.
You know, they might not admit it, but they're kind of proud of this thing because mostly they get good feedback.
Yeah.
That's why we want home cook recipes. You know, if you've got something you enjoy or someone said, hey, that's good, we want one of your recipes. So tell us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show and put it right in there. And we're going to start collecting these and start featuring them on the show. We think that's fantastic. Lisa Fain, you've taught us these recipes are up at our website with information about your cookbook, Homesick Texans Family Table. So whether it's a homemade sausage that gets made in about 5 minutes, it's unbelievable. In a fry pan, or this, you know,
jambalaya
with shrimp and sausage.
I'm going to make that one day.
Uh-huh. It's up on our website right now, WNPR.org. Search programs for the Faith Middleton Show. And, of course, you'll see the Food Schmooze link. Lisa Fain, what a pleasure to have you on the show, and I hope we hear more from you.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, my friend.
Okay.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. So, I'm sorry, it was the Homesick Texans Family Table, which is Lone Star Cooking from my kitchen to yours. Chris, I was going to say, what are you making tonight? But I know tonight we're off to judge a bourbon cocktail competition at Plan B in Milford, Connecticut. So we will not be cooking. We'll be eating and tasting. And off we go. Thank you so much, Chris Prosperi. As always,
Thank
I adore you. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime, including now at WNPR.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.